Peter B. Collins. News and comment. It's Tuesday, August 18th, 2015. There is a coordinated, orchestrated effort to bring down Planned Parenthood. Abortion rights, reproductive rights, access to women's health care. They're on the line right now as the forces of repression, the radical religious zealots in this country who call the Republican Party their political home, they're gaining ground every day. I just got an alert from Planned Parenthood. The governors of Utah and Arkansas have announced their schemes to cut off funding for Planned Parenthood. And that would join Alabama, Louisiana, and New Hampshire, who are in the process of defunding Planned Parenthood right now. And as we saw in the Republican debate, Scott Walker brags that he defunded Planned Parenthood in Wisconsin a year or two ago. And we know it started in Indiana with Mitch Daniels, the governor of Hoosierland. And in these states, women are at great risk, not only because they are denied access to abortion in many cases, but they can't even get contraception, a pap smear, breast cancer screening, testing or treatment for HIV or STD. And certainly those services can be found at clinics, at hospitals, for people who have access to standard medical care. But there are millions of American women who don't. And this has become a political football, and we're seeing very little defense being played by liberals, progressives, Democrats, take your pick. And this assault on Planned Parenthood is something that the Republicans are doing to pander to the far-right religious elements in this country, the so-called American Taliban. And they're hardly different from the evildoers of the Islamic State who impose extreme Sharia law. It is the triumph of religious values over secular values and tolerance of differences and tolerances of the beliefs of non-believers. And America is moving so far to the right, so far into the clutches of Christianists, that frankly I'm alarmed. And here's just one example. At the Republican debate, they were falling all over each other to be more conservative, to outdo one another about restricting abortion rights. Once again, Scott Walker of Wisconsin was bragging about how he just signed a 20-week limit on abortions, and that he proudly stated that he wants to ban abortion and doesn't even believe in exceptions for the life of the mother, incest, or rape. And the Republicans have successfully reframed the abortion debate issue. They have reframed it to a discussion of whether the exceptions should be permitted or not. In Republican land, the consensus view is abortion is evil and it must be banned. They don't care about the Constitution. They think Roe versus Wade was a mistake. And they believe more in, like Mike Huckabee says, the rule of God than the rule of law and its interpretation by the Supreme Court. And this is something I feel very strongly about. I grew up in an era where we had back alley abortions. Women were badly injured, exposed to infections, and even more shamed than what people try to do today with the protests outside abortion clinics. We came a long way, baby, and now we're sliding backward. And while I understand the arguments that come from the Christian right, it's up to us to push back and to say, no, you cannot impose your values on the rest of us. Nobody's forcing you to have an abortion. Nobody forces a religious person to use contraception if they don't want to. Nobody requires anybody to go to Planned Parenthood. And, you know, you've heard the facts over and over again. Facts don't matter. Only 3% of Planned Parenthood's federal or national budget goes to abortion services, and not $1 comes from federal funds. But that doesn't matter, just like it didn't matter that Acorn hadn't broken the law when these selectively edited videos by James O'Keefe were used to bring down that organization a couple of years back. The other issue that Republicans and many Democrats are fooling around with this August is the effort to scuttle the nuclear agreement with Iran by the U.S. and five other nations. There's some interesting developments here. Todd Gitlin and Stephen Cohen published an op-ed today in the Washington Post. I've linked to it in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. And the writers point out that most major Jewish organizations oppose the Iran deal, but based on polling, most American Jews, 63%, support the nuclear deal with Iran. Almost half of those people don't know that they don't have faith that it will last for 15 years, but they think it's better than nothing. And they don't buy the hysterical rhetoric suggesting that if we just leave the sanctions on, that Iran will just yield and give us a better deal. Everybody knows that's bullshit, except, I guess, the people who are spouting it. So this is very interesting because the same poll authorized by the Jewish Journal that polled American Jews also polled the rest of us. So 63% of self-reporting Jews support it, only 54% of the broader American population supports the deal. And Cohen and Gitlin note that the dominant leadership of American Jewry is older and more conservative than Jews on the whole. And I believe they're also taking their orders from the Netanyahu government in Israel. One of the other interesting angles here is that in this poll, they included what they call JNRs. That's a polling term for Jews with no religion. These are people who identify culturally or ethnically as Jewish, but they're not practicing their faith. The JNRs account for 5% of Jewish organization members, but 27%... of the general public. I've been noting a series of just incredibly over-the-top, exaggerated, hysterical full-page ads paid for by Howard Jonas, the World Values Network, Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, and the Zionist Organization of America, Mort Klein president. And now they're trying to squeeze New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker into adopting the Chuck Schumer position of rejecting the deal with Iran. And I won't bore you with this whole ad because it's mostly diatribe, but let me just read the closer to you. Senator Booker, at this grave moment, we implore you to act with courage and vote to kill the catastrophic deal with Iran before Iranian nukes kill millions of Americans. Now, how out of touch can you be? There is no threat that we can identify that is realistic based on any factual information that Iran would use a nuclear weapon on the United States. I think it's dubious that they would use a nuclear weapon on Israel, knowing that Israel has nuclear weapons itself and would likely respond. But this idea that the Iranian nuclear deal, which prevents them from developing a weapon for 15 years, that's all turned on its ear by the extreme Zionists of this era. And then they want to expand what would be a potential threat to the region and to the state of Israel, to be fair, and act like Boise, Idaho will be hit by an Iranian nuclear weapon. I mean, it's just actually crazy. Sheer lunacy. Interesting analysis in the New York Times today by John Harwood that the mechanism for congressional consideration of the Iranian deal reverses the typical legislative imperative. He says, instead of requiring an extraordinary majority to act, it requires an extraordinary majority to stop action. And he says this means that partisanship is all President Obama needs to approve the deal. So it goes like this. The Republican-controlled House and Senate will likely pass a resolution in September disapproving of the deal. Obama will veto it. And then to override that veto and block the deal, Republican leaders would need two-thirds majorities in each chamber. That would require roughly 25% of congressional Democrats to abandon Obama. And that is highly unlikely. I never thought I'd be on the same side of an issue with Hank Paulson. He's the Goldman Sachs alum who Bush made Treasury Secretary. He presided over the debacle of the economy in 2008, and the bailouts are not bailouts. Anyway, Hank Paulson says it's totally unrealistic to believe that if we backed out of this deal, that the multilateral sanctions would stay in place. And this is another fantasy on the part of Republicans who say, well, Obama just didn't negotiate hard enough. Well, this wasn't just the United States negotiating. And to imagine that we can simply say, no, we're not going to approve this, we got to go back to the table. Again, it is detached from reality, and that's very clear to me. So I just mentioned the New York Times and the Washington Post. And over this past weekend in the Sunday paper, the New York Times did a deep expose on Amazon, the huge retailer that's run by Jeff Bezos, a 51-year-old billionaire. And it's interesting because what the Times exposed is that Amazon is a terrible place to work. Unlike Google and the other tech companies, there's no free lunch. And there are horror stories that were told in anecdotes, mostly attributed to people who gave their names, not so much anonymous snipers. And one of them said that working at Amazon, he said, you walk out of a conference room and you'll see a grown man covering his face. He said, I worked there where nearly every person I worked with, I saw cry at their desk. In another quote, Amazon is where overachievers go to feel bad about themselves. So, you know, I don't work for Amazon. It doesn't sound like an attractive place to work. And some critics have surfaced who say this was an unfair, unbalanced report about Amazon. And Bezos says that he didn't recognize the company that was described in the article. But the question that the New York Times didn't raise, I don't think so, I read most, I think all of the article that they published, is whether Jeff Bezos imposes these same draconian workplace standards on his new employees at the Washington Post. And was the hit on Amazon actually a thinly veiled smack by the New York Times against its arch rival, the Washington Post? Every day I pause to mention some of the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And today I want to note some annual subscribers: Ann Bryant in Florida, Leanne Rayer, Bob Jarman, Tom Burkhart. They all kicked in $50 to support my work, and I want to thank them. I'd like to thank you as well, but you need to subscribe first. Come on over to peterbcollins.com. Do you know the drill? Under my picture, there's a link that says sign up. Next page, you can choose $5, $10, $20 a month. Our best deal is that $50 annual subscription, and new annual subscribers get a bonus gift, the ebook edition of Pepe Escobar's latest called Empire of Chaos. Well, Hillary Clinton's email problems continue. Government lawyers revealed on Monday that they now have flagged 305 documents from her emails for review to see if they should have been classified. And of course, Hillary herself has said that she never sent or received classified information, and it remains to be seen if that declaration holds to be true. And Clinton is backpedaling a little bit on the way she handled all this. She told Iowa Public Radio, "I did what other secretaries of state have done. I was permitted to and used a personal email. And obviously, in retrospect, given all the concerns that have been raised, it would have been probably smarter not to." "But I never sent or received classified email, nothing marked classified, and I think this will all sort itself out." Now, that's wishful thinking on Mrs. Clinton's part, because while she kind of laughed it all off at the Iowa State Fair over the weekend and declared that this is just political, there are serious issues that the emails will or may contribute to. They'll either expose things or contribute to our knowledge. And I think it's way early for her to try to declare that this is just, another political attack. And I was stunned to see this op-ed at The Guardian today by Mary Dajewski, who describes herself as a Hillary Clinton fan. As a reporter, she said she watched during Bill Clinton's administration. And she considers Hillary to be quite a tough individual. But she writes, "I just hope that there are those somewhere in her entourage who are even now begging her not to do it and to bow out while there is still time to do so with grace." And she says Clinton is a hugely divisive figure, not primarily because she's a woman. She says there is the Bill Clinton question, what do you do with Bill? She raises issues about the Clinton Foundation, which I think is where problems will arise when you take the State Department emails and compare the time frame with things that were going on at the Clinton Foundation and organizations or countries that were hiring Bill for $500,000 speeches. And the writer continues, she says, "For Clinton even to consider halting her campaign would be wrenching, and not only for reasons of personal ambition." But she says, "Now is the time to call it quits while the decision is still hers to make." I've linked to that so you can read the full commentary for yourself. The Obama administration has delivered a warning, a protest to Beijing, about the presence of Chinese government agents operating secretly in the United States. The Chinese call this effort Operation Fox Hunt, and they have been scouring the globe, hunting down those who they consider to be fugitives, and trying them for various corruption charges in China. And over the past year or so, 930 suspects have been repatriated, including more than 70 who have returned voluntarily this year alone. But the CIA says that there are a whole bunch of these agents operating secretly in the United States, and that's a violation of American law. And they separate these agents from people who are doing regular spying and industrial espionage. That's okay. But there have been reports of, essentially, these are Chinese bounty hunters. And they're operating illegally in the United States. I recently reported to you about a guy who has landed near Sacramento named Ling Wancheng, a wealthy and politically connected businessman. His brother was a top leader in the Communist Party, who's been accused of corruption, and they're trying to bring him back to China. So this is all a prelude to the state visit of the Chinese leader, Xi Jinping, coming up in September. And it's on the heels of the hacks of the Office of Personnel Management, which the U.S. has attributed to China. But they're using very careful language in describing that to try to avoid a big diplomatic scandal during the state visit in September. And meanwhile, in China, there's been a big crackdown. We don't know the exact time frame, But police have acknowledged that they have arrested a total of 15,000 people for crimes labeled jeopardizing internet security. Now, the Chinese are very aggressive in managing the internet and censoring information. Most recently, the huge industrial explosion in Tianjin, I think is the name of the town, has led to a crackdown on people who spread rumors about that event by posting pictures of it. Police have investigated 7,400 cases of so-called cybercrime, and the program launched last year is called Cleaning the Internet. Isn't that quaint? In New Zealand, they're having a series of protests about the Trans-Pacific Partnership deal. And I, for one, am excited to hear about this because while we do have active opposition to the TPP in this country, we haven't seen any significant street protests or other action. I mean, there have been a few. I'm not saying it has never happened. But here is a quick clip from Radio New Zealand from a demonstration that was held over the past weekend.
Thousands of protesters have poured into the streets across New Zealand, calling on their country to walk away from negotiations of the TPP. More than 2,000 people recently marched in the small New Zealand city of Dunedin, where activist Rob Stewart addressed the crowd.
We don't want this thing to go through. We're here as leaders of our community telling them, no way. Who's with me?
The TPP is highly controversial, not only because of the secrecy that surrounds it, but also because of leaked portions of the agreement that trade experts say could have serious negative implications for citizens of the signing countries.
So that's just a brief snippet from the report from Radio New Zealand. And again, I'm pleased to see that people in New Zealand understand that the TPP would lower the standards for workplace rules, government regulations, all kinds of things. And the secrecy is something that I share grave concerns about. And I'm happy to report that Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat from Ohio and an actual progressive, has notified the White House that he is blocking an Obama nominee for Deputy U.S. Trade Representative. And he is doing so because the White House won't permit his top staff members to take a look at the TPP draft as it stands today. And so Brown has said he'll put a hold on the nomination of Marissa Lago as Deputy U.S. Trade Representative until that changes. He called the White House to let them know of his action. He gave them a deadline to grant access to his staff members. And Brown's office says they never heard back. So that's an interesting little struggle over the TPP. And I'm glad to see Sherrod Brown is still fighting. A propaganda video released by the Islamic State in the last day or so calls on Muslims in Turkey to overthrow the government of their infidel president, Erdogan, and to take control of Istanbul. Now, this is just another call to action, but it does point out the delicate position that Erdogan has put himself in. Because by bobbing and weaving, by telling us he's joining the coalition to take on the Islamic State, and then he turns around and brutally pounds the Kurdish population, both inside Turkey and in Syria and Iraq, with fighter jets. Well, I think that Erdogan has gotten himself in quite a pickle. And while I don't expect that Muslims are going to rise up and overthrow the government in Turkey, there's a very strong military there, I think it is illustrative to see the many attacks on him. And as we pointed out, and Sibel Edmonds has indicated in our interview that was published last week here, it appears that the triggering event was a contrived event, a staged event, used to justify the military action. The Pentagon has announced that they are going to expand the use of drones. And I recently reported to you that the Air Force is unable to meet its goals every day of flying 60 drone patrols because the pilots are checking out. These are people who work in an air-conditioned Air Force base like at Creech outside Las Vegas, and they fly the drones that remotely kill people. And it appears that this has created a whole new type of post-traumatic stress damage. And, as a result, the Pentagon has announced they want to increase the use of drones by 50% over the next several years, and to do so, they're going to bring in the contractors. Oh, you bet. This is just another feeding frenzy for the military-industrial complex. And they're telling us that the outsourcing of drone flights will be limited to reconnaissance. So the reconnaissance flights, the surveillance flights, will be conducted by government contractors of private companies. But they'll only let uniformed military personnel run the flights that actually kill people. And I'll just point out that we have never had an honest and open debate in this country about the use of this new generation of high-tech weapons. And we've been using them for over 10 years now in increasing ways. And still, there is no clear protocol. It's all wrapped up in secrecy, even though we know it's going on. And it's just another bizarre development of the new normal in the United States of America. My final items today revolve around people from the great state of Georgia. As you know, former President Jimmy Carter announced last week that he has cancer. And I have a lot of affection for Jimmy Carter. I think he's been one of the best ex-presidents in my lifetime. And he's accomplished a great deal. He's offered, I think, some real honest criticism, like calling Israel's treatment of the Palestinians apartheid. But because of the sympathy generated and also backlash to attacks on him from silly people or stupid people, Jimmy Carter has been kind of lionized recently. And there's one meme going around on Facebook about how he never fired a shot. And Jimmy Carter was a deep, deep disappointment. He came into office after the Ford administration, promising to link human rights to foreign policy. And I embraced that, and then Jimmy Carter let us down time after time after time. And in the show file, I'm linking to a great article by Matt Pepe, published at Counterpunch, which politely but honestly recaps the dastardly deeds that occurred while Jimmy Carter was president. And I'll just tick them off for you. 1977, Zaire. 1977, Guatemala. 1977, East Timor. 1979, the early days of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. That was Zbigniew Brzezinski's great idea, and Carter embraced it. El Salvador in 1980 and the assassination of Archbishop Romero. And this article failed to mention two other key blunders by President Carter. He allowed the Shah of Iran first to leave Iran and go to Panama, and then he brought him to the United States for medical treatment. And he also allowed the failed dictator of the Philippines, Marcos, Ferdinand Marcos, to gain asylum here in the United States. So I have no ill will toward President Carter, but I think we have to be honest about his true record. And Julian Bond, a great son of the state of Georgia, an African American who was a civil rights leader, originally denied seating in the state legislature there after he'd been elected. He had to sue to be permitted to do his job as a state representative. That was back in 1965. It took until 1967 for him to actually begin to work in that job. He also co-founded the Southern Poverty Law Center and was chairman of the NAACP for many years. And Julian Bond was a very smart guy and a smooth operator, and I don't recall any scandal that ever surfaced around his name or his work. Thanks for joining me today for my News and Comment podcast. You are free to share this podcast with absolutely everyone. My Twitter friends, can you tweet it out for me? And retweet it and tweet it again? I'll be much obliged. I'm Peter B. Collins. Happy trails to you.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.